Hello, this is Dr. Larry Wilson, and this tape is about nutritional balancing and children's health. Children are a priority, and I like working with them. I love working with them for many reasons. For one thing, they respond very well, providing the parents and the child is willing to follow a pretty simple diet. I particularly like them to eliminate sugar in all forms, and that includes fruit juices and a lot of fruit, avoiding cow's milk dairy products except for butter, and avoiding wheat. And also, children don't require many nutritional supplements, and they respond quickly, and when they have healing reactions, they rest a lot, and it usually is not a big problem as it is in adults at some times. And I consider children a priority because children have their whole life ahead of them. And the priority in our nation, for example, to me seems incorrect, where we spend all the money on the old people and give them free this and free that, and now they want free drugs. And it doesn't seem to make any sense to me. So children are a wonderful subject, and they're wonderful to work with. The hair analysis is very nice, which I use, hair mineral testing, because children often do not describe in the same articulation what's going on, and we can get a lot of information that way quickly and inexpensively and non-invasively. We don't have to take their blood, so, and other things. There are a lot of topics I want to cover. Let's start with prenatal care. A lot of children's health depends on the health of the parents, particularly the mother. And it's bad enough when men don't take good care of themselves. When women don't take care of themselves, young women, then we're really in trouble, and we end up with a lot of problems with children. Animal breeders know this. They know that if you want healthy babies, you feed the parents well. It's fairly obvious, but it hasn't permeated the medical profession yet. Prenatal care needs to start with a woman reaches puberty, or certainly when she gets married, for example. The idea of starting prenatal care when you're pregnant is laughable, because by then a woman is already, 4 weeks at least, and often 6 weeks into her pregnancy by the time she gets her doctor's appointment. And what does the doctor do? He gives her a prenatal vitamin and maybe a little diet sheet and sends her home. By 4 to 6 weeks, a lot of the fetus is already developed. It's developed by 8 to 12 weeks, and then it simply grows larger. I have a book, Nutrition and Physical Degeneration, by Weston Price, and it has a picture of a woman, a primitive tribe, and as soon as the young women reach puberty, they would begin to go for miles. This one was holding up a special lobster crab that they feed to the young women, so that they will have healthy children. Prenatal care is very, very important and completely, as far as I can tell, practically ignored. They make a big deal out of it. They take your blood and they check if you're anemic or diabetic and that sort of thing. That's not what I'm talking about. That's sort of obvious stuff. But I'm talking about the woman's nutritional status. And you can't tell by looking at a woman. You certainly can't tell from a standard blood test. You can tell from a hair mineral test. Many of the women, beautiful as they are, they're exhausted, they're toxic, they're depleted in various minerals, they have imbalances, blood sugar problems, and so forth. I've had the pleasure of working with many pregnant women, and they produce what I call hair analysis babies. I had 4 of them last year, all around the same time, and there's such a difference in these babies. They're healthy, they don't get sick, they smile all the time. They don't cry. The birth is smooth and easy. It's quite dramatic, the difference that can be made. Some of these women had had other children before where they were very sick. The children came out ill and unhealthy and with ear infections, you know, in the first week or two of life and so forth. The children come out very pink and nice and healthy. So even if there isn't proper prenatal care and one can't get to a woman until she's pregnant, a lot can be done in the first 9 months of gestation to improve the health of the child. And, of course, the health of the mother at the same time. And I remember being very nervous because I thought, well, what if toxic metals come out during pregnancy or toxic chemicals and they get into the baby? Couldn't that cause problems? Yes, that is a concern. However, the reality in my experience has been that it doesn't happen. The body seems to protect the child that way. And in fact, it's quite the opposite. If you don't do a nutritional program to correct the toxic metals and the other imbalances, the toxic metals always find their way into the child. This is called a congenital condition. Congenital means present at birth. It is not genetic, although it can look like genetic because the child is born that way. But it's not due to a gene defect. It's due to the presence, to something that happened during gestation. That's what present at birth means. And that's actually the next topic that I would like to talk about. You know, doctors focus on genetic. Everything's genetic. You know, if you're fat, if you're thin, if you're an alcoholic, it's genetic. Breast cancer, whatever. They ignore what I call, what's called congenital problems. And it's hard to tell them apart. Congenital problem means present at birth, but it's not in the genes. They also ignore the fact that nutrients turn on genes. Nutrients turn on genes. This is a very important concept. So if they know that if you're low in folic acid or zinc, you can end up with birth defects. It's not only folic acid and zinc. Excess toxic metals are also teratogenic. Toxic chemicals can be teratogenic, that is, they cause birth defects. Other nutrients are probably needed too. The birth defect rate in America has doubled since 1950. Now that should be a cause for severe alarm, doubling from about 2% to 4%. And yet, you know, it's just kind of blown off and they build more neonatal care centers, which cost thousands and thousands of dollars. And these children with birth defects are a tremendous, you know, drain on society, not to mention the personal suffering of the child and the family. By the way, our infant mortality rate is not that great in America. There are places in America where it'd be safer to have your baby in Bangladesh than in America. That's how bad it is. So we have a long ways to go on this prenatal care business. And it has to do not with the standard thing like, you know, get your vaccinations and have your blood checked. It has to do with your body chemistry and your oxidation rate and your toxic metals and your nutrients and your mineral ratios. So congenital problems are huge in children, and they're leading to lots and lots of illnesses, every illness in the book, from infections, failure to thrive, attention deficit, autism, cancer in children, which is another huge growing problem, and others. What's nice is that we can see the congenital imbalances on a hair mineral test. We can see in a child who's 6 months old, who's never even tasted food, we can see all these toxic metals, and you know that they're born with those things. Also, I often test the mother, and they've got the same thing, and you realize that it's the ill mothers that are producing the ill children. We call them third-generation copperheads sometimes because, you know, the mother has been raised by a mother who's been raised by a mother who is copper toxic, and so they have these babies that are loaded up with copper, and the babies have all these problems. Copper is associated with learning disorders, infections, failure to thrive, failure to grow, and other things. Cancer is associated with high copper. So it's a very important issue, and I don't know how, other than making tapes and speaking and writing, which I do some of, to get the word out that these things can be prevented, and that's the best, of course. They can also be treated, but it's better, certainly better to prevent, cheaper and easier. And while we're talking about toxic metals, I need to point out that children are extremely prone to accumulating toxic metals, not only from their mothers in utero, but once they're born. The reason is they're rapidly growing. And toxic metals, if the nutrient minerals are not available, toxic metals will replace them. This is called the concept of preferred minerals. That is to say, every enzyme in the body has a preferred mineral in that enzyme. You know, alcohol dehydrogenase, it should be zinc. many other enzymes, it's something else, and so forth. However, if that mineral is not present, then the body will take up a toxic metal. It's like a replacement part in a car. That's not the right part, but it sort of works. For example, zinc can be replaced by cadmium. Lead might also replace zinc. Cadmium is right under zinc in the periodic table, which means that its structure is very similar to zinc, only it's larger, it's heavier metal. And so it will fit in there. It won't do as good a job. The enzyme might work 5% of normal, but it'll work. And it'll keep you going. Again, like a replacement parts on a car. Children, because they're growing very fast, they must have their nutrition, or they pick up the toxic metals, which are in the environment, very easily and quickly. They're also very prone to, there are other reasons too, of course. Dosage that is not that bad for an adult, just because the child is small, is going to impact a child much more. So nutrient deficiencies and toxic metals are of special importance for children. Now, once the child is born, they have other challenges. One of the first today, unfortunately, is vaccines. And it's important that I mention vaccines for a number of reasons. First of all, when I grew up, there were about 8 vaccines. Now there are 22. So they're really going wild with vaccines. The medical profession, it's sort of a sacred cow, and for every illness, they want to come up with a vaccine, and I don't know, it must be every month or two on the radio I hear about some new vaccine that they're testing. A lot of those I never hear about again, and I think that's because they don't work and they may have a very toxic side effects. Everybody remembers recently the anthrax vaccine in the Air Force where they had so many pilots quitting they stopped doing it. There's good evidence that the AIDS virus was spread in the smallpox vaccine in Africa, possibly by design, and that HIV was spread in New York with the hepatitis B vaccine in the gay community in about 1990 or 88, whatever it was. It's easy to contaminate vaccines, and they're still using thimerosal, a mercury compound, as a preservative in vaccines, and aluminum as some kind of preservative or carrier or stabilizer in vaccines, both of which are extremely toxic, and especially for young children. Today they give children the hepatitis B vaccine in the hospital before they go home. This, to me, makes absolutely no sense, other than they want to get it in you. But because a child is not exposed to hepatitis in the first 6 months of life, they're usually at home, and also the child's immune system is very undeveloped at that time. It's very dangerous to me to start injecting things into a child like that. And I get to hear all the stories about the children who were just fine until age 3 or 4, and then someone gave them a vaccine, and then they stopped speaking, and they became antisocial, and they became autistic. So I'm hoping that we can alert our legislators and our leaders and our medical people that there's a problem with the vaccines, and they're not the answer. I don't tell parents what to do about vaccines because it's such a personal decision. I do recommend reading both sides of the story, though. Don't just listen to the doctor. And if I have a child, I would not vaccinate that child. There's no question in my mind about that. There are homeopathic vaccines. I'm not sure how effective they are. I'm not sure if they're necessary either. I don't think they are. Childhood diseases do not need to be threatening if they're treated correctly and if the child is healthy. So they're largely overblown. For example, in the case of polio, few people are aware that 90% of the polio cases are simply a flu-like illness. In another 5%, there is transitory paralysis, and then it goes away. Only in 5% of the cases was there permanent paralysis. And there are doctors like William Frederick Koch, who wrote a fascinating book in which he showed that he was able to reverse polio even 20, 30 years later with some substances that restored the oxidation of the cells. I've had, the other thing that's happening is that there's outbreaks of whooping cough in vaccinated children. When I lived in Mexico, most of the children who were vaccinated with polio were the ones who got polio, because we worked with polio down there. So the entire vaccine myth needs to be exploded. There's a wonderful article in the Milbank Quarterly. It was a number of years ago, but they showed that the major infectious illnesses were on the decline before vaccines started. And so anybody who tells you the vaccines are responsible for getting rid of the diphtheria and whooping cough is wrong. That is not what happened. And hygiene is probably the best thing. Better housing, better cleanliness and hygiene, better sewage disposal and all that. Those were the factors that really got rid of a lot of the killer diseases like smallpox and things like that. There was recently a fellow talking about terrorist attacks. He was very interesting because he's from the CDC and he's a very well-renowned person. And he said, you know, it doesn't matter what they do. You're not going to have a major polio outbreak in America. The elimination of polio in America, I'm not polio, smallpox in America, he said, was not due to vaccine. It was due to hygiene. It was due to cleanliness, better housing, and that, you know, not crowded conditions and dirty conditions. It's very important to realize this. And, you know, what's sad is that America is slowly moving incrementally towards socialized medicine. You know, we have Medicare, Medicaid, now we have kids care. Now the seniors and some other people want, you know, free drugs, supposedly, quote, free drugs. It's not free, of course. Anyway, the more they do that, the more that they have the right, the government has the right to intervene in your life and tell you that you have to vaccinate your kids, because after all, they're going to pay for it if your child gets sick. And so I hope we have the wisdom to say no. Healthcare is an individual, private matter. You cannot turn the responsibility over to the government. That does not work in Europe. It's not working in Canada. They're all going broke. And it doesn't work here. You know, Medicare and Medicaid, that along with Social Security, those are breaking the budget of America as well. Those are the main budgetary items now. This drift into socialized medicine, which is, of course, for a lot of people is not a drift, they're pushing it very hard, is going to cause the government to have more and more control over your children if you're not careful. I guarantee that. I promise you that. Because if they're paying the bills, they're going to tell you what to do. And if you don't do it, you'll have your children taken away. They've already done that in a few cases. The parents who refuse to, you know, use allopathic drugs or vaccines, they certainly threaten to do that because, after all, they're paying the bills, so it's their child now. So there has to be a reversal of that, and then healthcare costs will come down. The rising healthcare costs is not due to private medicine, it's due to government medicine. I have a chart of the healthcare costs in America. I know this is off the subject, but it's very important. And before Medicare, before 1967, the graph was almost flat. It was going up slightly because the population was growing, but it was not a big deal. After Medicare, after the government got involved in healthcare in a big way, the graph turns vertical, and the healthcare costs have not stopped skyrocketing. And they're not going to, because the government artificially produces demand with its low-priced services, and people just go crazy. And all they do is they cut back and cut back and come back. So that's an important topic with vaccines. Related to that is medical drugs. Children are often heavily medicated, even by the time they're 5. I have friends whose children were hardly ever off antibiotics. That's very unfortunate. Now they're putting the children on Ritalin, and they're putting them on antidepressants, I can't believe it, things like Prozac and others for depression. When really what's going on is these children are burned out. When I do their hair tests, they're exhausted. So of course they're depressed. Some of them, they're fast oxidizers, so they have behavior problems. Fast oxidizers are aggressive and irritable, hyper-irritable, hyper-alert, hyper-responsive. That's what fast oxidation is. It's a fight or flight state. These children are in it. So another insult to children's health that we want to avoid is a lot of medication, a lot of prescription medication, or over-the-counter medication, Tylenol and all that. It's quite easy to do that. There are natural substitutes, vitamin A and vitamin C for infections. I don't use colloidal silver as a first thing because it's a little toxic, but it works. It will knock out all kinds of infections. Echinacea, simple herb that will is very good. Propolis, bee propolis, very good for infections. If you correct the diet, get rid of the allergic foods, cow's milk, dairy, wheat, and spelt, by the way, and sugar in all forms, including rice bran syrup, maple syrup, honey, fruit juice, things sweetened with fruit juice. If you get rid of these things, so many problems go away. Also, the child needs plenty of rest and sleep and should not get stressed out. I don't care what the reason is. There's no reason to stress a child out. If he doesn't clean up his room, then you go for help. Don't just scream and yell at your children. Don't push them around, kick them around. I see that so often, it's kind of disturbing. You see it in supermarkets, and places like that, and the parent just screaming at the kid and the child whining or crying, whatever it is. There's got to be a better way. And of course, a lot of those children are not healthy, and the parents are fed up, and I understand that it gets very difficult to deal with a hyperactive kind of child. I was once over at a friend's house. They had a two-year-old, and this two-year-old was just walking and screaming and wouldn't calm down. And I said, "Do you have any calcium and magnesium in this house?" And she said, "Yeah, I got some." And so I said, "Well, give me some." And we crushed up a bunch of tablets, put it in some milk or something, and gave it to this child. And, the child calmed down. In other words, a lot of children are deficient in what are called the sedative minerals. Sedative minerals are calcium, magnesium, and zinc. Actually, I think that's what it was. It was a CalMag with zinc tablet. And you can turn children on and off like a faucet sometimes by giving them enough of this stuff. And it is quite safe. I once had a patient, a young boy, he was about 9, very hyperactive. He had some brain damage and had serious problems. We made a lot of progress, but this child was just very reactive. And his mother had to put him on a bus all by himself to go someplace. And oh my gosh, he was really, this was going to be a mess because this child had trouble sitting still at all, let alone for an hour or two on a bus. And so I said, "Well, I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to give him more than an adult dose of our sedative elements, calcium, magnesium, and zinc. We also gave him choline and inositol. Choline is a precursor for acetylcholine, and it is very a calming neurotransmitter. You can also use GABA. GABA is gamma-aminobutyric acid. It is also a calming type of neurotransmitter. And also, there are some amino acids like taurine and tryptophan, or 5-HTP, 5-hydroxytryptophan, which are calming and relaxing. And with these substances, these children can calm down, and you don't need to give them Valium, and you don't need to give them all kinds of drugs. Vitamin A alone is very, very good for mucous membranes and for infections. And I do not find a problem with overdoses of vitamin A. Even a small child can take 50,000 units, 25 to 50,000, 25 for an infant, of vitamin A for a few days, and it will help with bronchial infections, ear infections, and so forth. So staying away from medications and vaccines, to me, is very important for children's health and related to their nutrition, because antibiotics, of course, deplete the flora, they weaken the immune system, and they're toxic to the liver and other organs. And by doing that, infections can be prevented and they can be handled. When a child even sniffles, that's the time to give some vitamin A, some maybe echinacea with zinc, one of these little combination formulas that they have. That's the time. You don't have to wait. You don't have to get a throat culture, and you don't have to wonder which drug do we use and all that. There's no need. That's what I do with myself. If I sniffle, I take a handful of vitamin A. Why not? And some propolis. It's not going to hurt me, and it generally will abort any sort of infection that may be getting started in there. Infections are an important problem for children. They're prone to the ear infections. There's been good studies showing that antibiotic therapy for ear infections is not helpful. They just get recurrent ear infections. It's still unfortunate that many children get their tonsils removed. Again, tonsils are a lymph organ, and they're responding usually to infection. When you get swollen lymph nodes, it's because you usually have an infection. And the tonsils is where the ears drain and other areas, throat and bronchial ear infections are very, very common in children and needn't be a problem. Okay, let's move on and talk about another big problem, which is hypoglycemia in children. And this is related to behavioral things, but it's also related to physical health. Children are generally fast oxidizers. Their metabolic rate is fast. As they get older, they should slow down, but they should be fast. Now, today, many are burned out. That means they're slow oxidizers, but they are all born fast. And fast oxidizers are very prone to low blood sugar. They're like 8-cylinder engines. They burn a lot of fuel. The fuel they need is fat. I cannot emphasize that enough. Young children need fat in their diet. So many parents are afraid to give fat because they're afraid of cholesterol. Fat is very essential for young children. That's why breast milk is high in fat, human milk. Butter. I know children who crave it so much, they'll just take their hand and they'll stick it right in the butter and they'll just grab it and put it in their mouth. Oils are not such good products. Olive oil is okay, but the other oils are not so great. Coconut oil is fine. But butter, eggs, meats, nut butters like almond butter, peanut butter, natural peanut butter only, because the other has sugar in it and hardened oils. Natural peanut butter is okay. It's good for putting vitamins in, by the way. It has a strong flavor. All the nut butters do. But there is a possibility of this aflatoxin, even if the stuff is certified at the factory, to be free of it. So I don't prefer peanut butter, but it is not a bad food otherwise. Almond butter is better. And these have very nice oils in them. Nuts are okay, but the child has to chew them thoroughly, and young children may not do that. Okay, so hypoglycemia, when you don't eat correctly, you get hypoglycemic because a fast oxidizer, if they eat carbohydrates, certainly fruit juices, which a lot of parents feed, you end up, it shoots the blood sugar up, and then a couple hours later it's down. When it goes up, the child can be hyperactive. When it goes down, the child can be confused, irritable, and sometimes very lethargic. Then they eat more sugar and they're up again. And they go on this roller coaster, and after a while they end up with diabetes, and juvenile diabetes is growing at a great rate. It's not only due to the diet, it's due also to these deficiencies the children are born with. Blood sugar regulation requires zinc, manganese, and chromium, for example. It requires that the sodium-potassium ratio be in good shape. It is off in many children. So a lot of this hypoglycemia is related to the school problems and the behavior problems. Friends of mine have young children, and I was over there, and usually these children are well-behaved and kind children, but this time a mother-in-law was visiting, had taken the kids out, and of course couldn't resist giving them ice cream or something, and they just were little wild monsters. That's the only way to describe them. The only thing to do with them was to separate them and put them in their beds and tell them they had to stay there for a while because they were uncontrollable. It's amazing that doctors don't all tell parents this. Sugar will make your child wild. It won't make every child wild because it depends on their chemical makeup, but it will make a lot of children, it will worsen the behavior of most children. And of course, Dr. Feingold, many, many years ago, found that the colors and the flavors, the additives, sugar, these things, you get rid of those things and 50% of the hyperactive children return to normal. And there was a bogus study it was probably sponsored by a drug company, which I found out about because it was showed to me and they said, see, sugar doesn't matter and these colors, they don't matter and the additives don't matter. Well, you know what they did? They gave as a control, they used one cookie for your kids that was loaded with sugar and colors and flavors. And then the control group, they used a different cookie that didn't have sugar in it, but it still had all these colors in it. So it was a bogus thing, or they used some other sweetener, which is just as bad, or almost as bad, whatever. Maybe they used honey or molasses or something. So it was not a well-done study. There's so many poor medical studies. You have to use your common sense. Sugar upsets calcium metabolism. It upsets blood sugar. It's very, very bad for children, and that includes fruit juice and a lot of fruit. I think children are better off without it. Less is better, and never the juice. If you want a little fruit, fine. The real fruit, berries is probably best because they're not too sweet. We're getting to the end of this side of the tape. So please stop your tape recorder right where it is, turn the tape over, and we will continue on the other side of this tape. Related to hypoglycemia and diabetes is chronic yeast infection, chronic candida albicans in the intestines and sometimes in other places in the body. This too is very common in children today. It's often undiagnosed. It often goes undiagnosed. The child may have symptoms such as a little gas, bloating, stomach cramps, or upset, but often there aren't many symptoms. There can be a lot of other symptoms, by the way, dizziness, fatigue, pains, aches and pains, joint pains, and other things. The causes of the yeast infection are several. First of all, a lot of these children are high in copper. Copper is the body's natural yeast killer. Copper sulfate is sprayed on vegetables and fruits. Copper is put in swimming pools to kill algae and fungus. And when the copper is out of balance, as it is in many children, the body cannot get rid of yeast. You can put the child on a special diet. You can give them Diflucan and nystatin and caprylic acid and the other yeast things, but it will not get rid of the problem. It will control the problem. But when you stop all those, it'll tend to come back until the copper is brought into balance. That's my observation. Yeast problems are also made worse, of course, by the use of antibiotics because they damage the normal flora, they are toxic to the liver, they weaken the immune system, and many children, unfortunately, get a lot of these. Other sources of the yeast problem, of course, is a diet high in sugar, and that includes fruit juices. You know, if a child must have fruit juice, dilute it way, way down, mostly water. But the best thing is to keep the sweet taste away. So diets high in sugars, diets high in carbohydrates contribute to this. The yeast problem is important because it causes sugar cravings. It can be related to that. It can cause what you might call brain fog because the yeast is actually producing alcohol, and it can cloud the mind. It can cause other kinds of behavioral and learning problems as a result of brain fog and problems concentrating and that sort of thing. So it is a very common thing, and correcting the body chemistry is part of correcting it. The child may also need, for example, acidophilus and to improve the flora and ways to detoxify the body to get the drugs out of the child's system. And of course, correcting the balance of copper in the body. Related to yeast infections and hypoglycemia and diabetes is obesity. And this is, of course, now considered an epidemic in children. And of course, we've been led astray by the Heart Association diet, which is to eat all the carbohydrates and avoid the fat. This is much more important for children than for anyone else because they are often fast oxidizers. And fast oxidizers require fat. They will not get fat on fat. Parents need to understand that. They won't have high cholesterol because they're eating fat. It doesn't work that way. And it sort of annoys me when I read doctors and nutritionists writing articles and, well, if you want to lose weight, you just have to eat fewer calories. No, it doesn't work that way. Dr. Atkins, if no one else, among others, has proven that. He allows people to have as much fat as they want. You can have 4 eggs a day if you want, and they lose weight. And their blood sugar comes down. And their cholesterol gets better. So it's a lot of baloney that you have to cut out fat. And for children, it's downright dangerous. The brain is a lot of fat. And the brain is growing quickly in children. and the brain requires the fatty acids. So fats are very important for children. And the best sources are things like the oily fish, butter, eggs, meats. You can also use the fish oil capsules, or cod liver oil, of course, was given to children for years and years. And although there's maybe some contamination these days with fish oils, with mercury, it's still a wholesome thing, relatively speaking. I don't know that every child needs it, but those who are having difficulties. So obesity is a very important thing today, and a lot of it is just the diet. Now, it can also be if the child's sitting in front of a computer all the time and not out playing and things like that. I worked with a woman in Flagstaff, and she would take in foster kids into her home, and they were often teenagers. They weren't necessarily young. What was interesting is that she was tiny. She was this little petite little lady, and I remember she had a boy there who was 300 pounds. I mean, this kid sat on the toilet one day and just cracked the toilet. I mean, it was amazing. This kid was big. And she made all the food from scratch, and she knew about nutrition, and it was amazing. Because she didn't really restrict the boy. I mean, she didn't, you know, I mean, it was good food. But she would make him muffins and other things. And he just lost weight like crazy. And I'm sure that it was not only that it was a more balanced and healthy diet, because, of course, she used plenty of vegetables and things, but it was also homemade food. It was real food. What happens today to children in particular, because they're a little more in touch with their needs than adults, is when they eat refined food, they know, their bodies know, that they're not getting the minerals and vitamins they need. I mean, these are literally what they call empty calories. You know, all the white bread and the white rice, white sugar products and the pastries and the candies and the cookies. And if they eat these foods, the child will eat, you know, 5-6 times as much, because there's no vitamins in there, there's no minerals. And the body knows it needs these things. And so part of my theory as to why this boy did so well is that the food that she was making, this woman was making, she would use whole grains that were organic and all that kind of stuff. It wasn't necessarily a low-carbohydrate diet, but it was a very mineral-rich food. It was very, very rich. It was good food. I once worked at a camp, and the nurse's son came up there, and the little boy started eating 5 or 6 times as much food, and the nurse was appalled. And the reason is that at the school, at the camp, all the food was institutional food. It was out of a can. They had those, you know, big number 10 cans, and that was the potatoes, the peeled potatoes, the peeled carrots, you know, the white bread and the white flour products. That's all we had. Well, there's no minerals left in that stuff. Very little. And so the boy just started to eat like crazy. And this is a big cause of obesity that's a hidden cause. And forcing the kid to not eat and, you know, whining and nagging them, that's not the answer. The answer is to nourish them. And I find that the people who avoid junk food, people who eat very mineral-rich food, and I would add to that kelp. If you want to do one supplement that's a mineral, for minerals, for example, kelp is simple. It's cheap. It comes in tablets. It comes in granules. It can be sort of cooked into food. It kind of disguises it. It has a little fishy taste, unfortunately. Dulse is okay, and it's actually sweet. It's another seaweed. And I know kids who eat it like candy. Then the person fills up, and you simply don't eat as much. And my experience is people who eat very high-quality food do not get obese. If they only eat high-quality food, you have much less chance of being obese for that reason. So that's important to remember. The children will eat to become satiated, adults too, and then they become obese if they're eating junk food or if they're eating too many carbs when they need fat. They also need those vegetables, and they need cooked vegetables, not just salads, because salads are often not digested well. And the minerals, you know, they cook down, and the minerals get concentrated in the cooked food. So I like cooked food. I know some people are on this raw food thing. I'm not a big fan of juices because I think they upset blood sugar. That includes vegetable juices. Carrot juice is very, very sweet. Now, a little bit is fine, but as a general rule, it's not the answer. So a lot of the obesity is simply the diet. Now, a lot of children are also born with mercury in their pituitary glands, mercury in their thyroid, cadmium in their glands, lead, arsenic, and their bodies just don't work right. And that's going to be a longer process. It can be undone. Sauna therapy is wonderful for this, along with nutritional balancing. Nutritional balancing with the vitamins and all is very important, but sauna therapy for children over age 4, I do not recommend saunas for children under 4. Their sweat glands are less developed, first of all, and secondly, they have a higher water content in their bodies, and so it's easier for them to get dehydrated. You have to be more careful. But a child over 4, sauna therapy, if they are willing to do it and get in there and make it fun or whatever, you can sweat out a lot of the toxic chemicals, the toxic metals, and it's a very excellent adjunctive therapy. Of course, a child should be supervised in a sauna. You don't want to just let a child run around in there alone, but you go in with them. So obesity can be due to toxic metals in these glands. And again, if that's the problem, then diets are not going to be enough. And, you know, making a child eat some crazy diet, even if it's a good diet, is not going to work. Certainly, just giving the child protein is not going to work, and protein powders. I don't really like all those protein powders, by the way. I prefer people eat real foods because you get more nutrients. That's the fact. When they take an egg, for example, and they make it into egg protein powder, well, things are lost, you know? When they take soybeans or make it into soy powder, you know, or whatever it is, it's not the same as eating the real food. Foods disintegrate quickly when they're broken down that way. So I actually prefer if people will eat real food and use the protein powder and the drinks and all that as a last resort when you're, you know, if for those days when you're in a hurry or something comes up and you just can't have a regular meal. Not something that people depend on. Vegetable soups are very wonderful for children who don't like vegetables too much. You can always put butter on vegetables and peanut butter sauce. You just take some peanut butter or almond butter and you mix it with a little water and you make this sort of sauce out of it and then you pour it over vegetables and the children may eat it. The other thing is soups. Soups are very nice because you can puree them, you can disguise all kinds of stuff in a soup, all kinds of wonderful nutrients. I once worked at an orphanage in Mexico, and that's basically what we fed the kids. We would make them these soups, and then what I did was, they had only donated food, and a lot of it was junk. It was white flour and things like that, white sugar, government sort of issue. And so I went to a sugar mill and I got some molasses, and we dumped that into the soup, and we got some Swiss chard, and we cooked that into the soup. Swiss chard is very rich in minerals. And the kids ate it because, you know, mixed in with some tomatoes and some other things, you're not going to taste it. So there are ways to encourage children to eat. It takes some patience. Children learn very much by example, very, very much by example. And so it's important for parents to set an example. And frankly, I don't see how you can get a child to eat well if the rest of the family is living on junk. Okay, let's talk about failure to thrive syndromes. These are very common. Another name now is PDD, which is persistent delayed development or delayed development. There are a number of names. Somehow, when we don't understand something, the temptation is to rename it as though somehow that cures the problem. I worked with a little girl with chromosome 34 defect, I believe. This is in my book. There are several cases of children in my hair analysis book, Nutritional Balancing and Hair Mineral Analysis. And I'm referring to them because that way, if I can only take a few minutes on the tape, but if you want to see the whole case, it's in the book. Child was 1 year old when the mother brought her. She'd been all over trying to help this child. Doctor's bad prognosis for this. Basically a vegetable. The child hardly moved, had not grown, was the size of a newborn, had no control over arms and legs, couldn't control her eyes, and was told, you know, she'd never speak and all this. And I didn't know what we could do, but I did a hair analysis. She was very toxic in lead, mercury, cadmium. She had an extremely low ratio of sodium to potassium, which is involved with, it's a vitality ratio, we call it, but it has to do with protein metabolism and other things. And her zinc was dreadfully low. Zinc is required for growth. And I started her on a few vitamins, and this child began to grow like a weed. And we had lots of problems. The child had seizures, and of course we have to crush the things. The mother was on welfare, actually, had no money, begged, borrowed vitamins and other things. And the child just did wonderfully and started, still has no control over legs, or very little, has gained some control. Ended up going to Arizona State University at the age of 15, because this was a while ago that I worked with this child. So you never know what's going to happen. This child was supposed to be a vegetable. She learned to communicate with a little keypad, like on a typewriter pad, and she would point to the letters because she can't speak. And she still looks horribly retarded, but in fact, she's not retarded at all. And she's done very well. There's research with Down syndrome kids where nutrition can turn them around, and they become quite high functioning. So even genetic causes of failure to thrive can be changed. However, a lot of it is simply low zinc. There are zinc-deficient dwarfs in Egypt because zinc is required for growth. And by the way, there's a case of infections in that same book, Twins, where they were going to the doctor once a week. The mother told me that on average, they were going to the doctor once a week. Their name are Megan and Molly, and they were always ill. And their hair analyses came back quite identical, which was very interesting in terms of the accuracy of hair analysis, which some people question. But also, they had high levels of toxic metals, very low sodium-potassium ratios, and they had unbalanced chemistries. You know, they were, in that case, both the girls were burned out. That is to say, they had a high calcium level, which is indicative of, slow metabolism. On their first charts, both of them had high calciums. They both had low sodium-potassium ratios, especially Molly. They both had very low zinc levels. One had a 6, one had an 8. Normal is 20. That means zinc is required for the immune system. So it's very important. Both of them had high coppers, especially Molly had a copper of 19. I'm sorry, Molly's actually had a 6 when we started, a 6 zinc. They both had a 6 zinc the first time. One had a 13 copper, one had a 19 copper. Copper's supposed to be 2.5. The girls both had cadmium poisoning. Well, cadmium interferes with zinc. Therefore, it interferes with the immune system. And cadmium also weakens the body. It weakens the energy system tremendously. As they got well, they both dumped out lead. Mercury rose. Mercury also impairs the immune system. So these children were way out of kilter. And the mother came back and she said, after a year, she came back and she said, you know, we haven't been to the doctor for an infection for a year. And for her, that was just astounding. That was just amazing. But that's what you can do. I don't claim any special powers here. That's what you can do when you correct body chemistry. And of course, it's fine to use the symptomatic remedies for infections like vitamin A and C, but if they're just used randomly, you won't get the results because, for example, vitamin C lowers copper. Sometimes you want copper. And certain things will counteract other things. Too much vitamin A lowers sodium. That would not be good, in these children at least, in Molly and Megan. So the infections do respond, and the trick is to balance the chemistry. Failure to thrive, we've had a lot of children who pick up and do very well when they're given nutrients. It's sort of like growing a plant. You know, if you ever have a garden, you know that the plants need nutrients, but somehow in nutrition or in medicine, that's still a strange concept. I once invested in earthworms, and I was amazed to find out they even feed vitamins to earthworms. This was a professional farm. It was a very, you know, commercial operation, and they even feed vitamins to the earthworms. Okay. ADHD, of course, is an epidemic. They say that one out of every 5 children today has a learning disorder. And some 10 million children are on Ritalin related products, and now they're putting them on Prozac in addition sometimes. And it's really an epidemic. It's really sad. They find that the Ritalin will control behavior, but it does not necessarily improve academic performance. Anyone who has a practice in nutrition will come across these children. Again, it's unfortunate that it's not, the hair analysis is not done, because you see right away so many problems. There's a case in the nutritional balancing book. It's a case, the little boy's name is Jonan. And it's hyperkinetic behavior. This boy, I called him the holy terror at my office, because that's about the best description. He was just all over the place, and his poor mother, you know, the poor parents, they get completely worn out trying to run after these kids. We got Jonan's hair test back. His calcium was 14, his magnesium was 2. Calcium should be about 40, magnesium about 6. So here was about a third of normal. And his zinc was 3. It's supposed to be 20. Now, calcium, magnesium, and zinc, we call the sedative elements. The sedative elements. They calm you down. They're also psychological buffer elements. That is to say, they protect a person from stress. They literally act like a little wall around you that protects you. So this boy had none of that. He was very, very low. And zinc is also calming and relaxing and associated with emotional stability. If that wasn't bad enough, he had lead poisoning. Lead is associated with hyperactive behavior. It's also associated with lowered IQ, even a small amount of lead. He had mercury toxicity that was off the scale here. Mercury is associated with the Mad Hatters of Alice in Wonderland were mercury poisoned. They made hats and they rubbed mercury on felt and they became emotionally disturbed, had to quit the job. His cadmium was 10 times normal. His mercury was 10 times normal. His lead was over 10 times normal. It was 14 times normal. Cadmium is also associated with behavior problems. Severe behavior problems, like the serial killers, often have high cadmium, high lead. They've done studies on these people. So this boy had all that stuff. He also had aluminum toxicity, which is associated with cognition and memory problems. So, you know, this was a sort of extreme and obvious case, but this is not atypical. He was 2. The ages range for these children. Now, taking Ritalin may knock them down a little bit, but it certainly doesn't correct any of those imbalances that I just read off. Yet those imbalances are correctable, and we were able to correct them with this little boy. And it didn't take very long, a few weeks, when the mother called and said, you know, he's like a different child. I think she called him a little monster. And she said, now I have a little boy. And I've heard that about little girls who are just mean and ornery turn into sweet little girls. And it is possible to correct these things. Now, it does take, sometimes it's easy, it's just all some simple chemical thing and just take the vitamins. Usually it does take the parents to watch the diet, keep the kids off sugar. They often crave the sugar. They have to be creative with kids to get the vitamins in them sometimes, you know, crush them, grind them, put them in the blender, whatever it takes. But it can be done. And a lot of these children can get better. Now, of course, they also need a stable home environment. They need parents who don't push them around, kick them around, and are not, preferably don't have a lot of problems themselves. But basically, Jonan was retested a year later. He came back and was retested, and his calcium had improved somewhat. His sodium and potassium actually got worse. They went up even higher. That happens sometimes as the metals are coming out. The sodium and potassium get pushed up higher. But he was doing a lot better. His zinc almost doubled from 3 to 5. Of course, he needs a lot more zinc. We're still nowhere near 20.
fast oxidizers often run a low zinc. His lead had come down from 1.4 to 0.9. His mercury had come down almost in half from 0.5 to 0.29. The cadmium had come down from 0.10 to 0.7. He was actually eliminated more aluminum. The aluminum went up. Again, toxic metals, sometimes on the first hair test, you don't see them. That's why nutritional balancing is important and not simply doing some test, whether it's a EDTA challenge test, DMPS challenge test, or hair analysis, or just a plain hair analysis. You can't find all the metals on the first test. This is very, very common. And it's a mistake to get some test and then say, well, mercury didn't show up, so I guess I don't have it. Nonsense. The reality today is that all the children are born with some of this, and certainly the adults all have it. There's no way to avoid it. And any doctor who tells you, oh no, you don't have a problem with that, I would disagree. I would say it's just that you can't find it because it's stuck away deep in the kidney, deep in the brain, deep in the liver, and you're not going to reach it. A hair analysis only tells what gets into the hair. A challenge test only tells you what is in the arteries where the substance goes, you know, the EDTA, or perhaps the arterial walls and maybe a little bit in some nearby tissues, but it's not going to get things that are very deep. So my experience is the toxic metals are there. That's why we're having the epidemic of ADHD and learning disorders, other kinds of learning disorders. It's very gratifying as a doctor. I remember one little girl came in for infections, and when she started to get better, her mother said, oh, and you know, by the way, her grades have gone from all D to all A. And you know, we never discussed that. That was not part of the problem. So learning disorders do respond. By the way, just one other thing that I forgot about prenatal care and mothers. You know, copper imbalance is associated with not only morning sickness and preeclampsia, but it's associated with postpartum depression. It's associated with all depression, and more children today are diagnosed with depression. Now, my experience with that is these children have adrenal burnout. We sometimes call them burnout babies. And a child can be burned out at age 5. They often have the dark circles under their eyes. They have the allergies, the lethargy, lack of interest, or they get irritable and they cry and things like that easily. So another topic that we might mention is adrenal burnout or burnout in children. This is growing and growing and growing. We didn't used to see it, but what's happening is the children are born with two strikes against them. They're born deficient, they're born toxic, and then it doesn't take much. It may be vaccines, a couple of rounds of antibiotics, junk food, a combination, not the best home life, you know, kind of a not very calm home life, pressures of school, and they go into burnout. They just literally burn out. When we say that, that's literally burning out nutrients that are needed for the energy system of the body and the glands, and the metabolism slows down, and these children show exhaustion patterns on a hair analysis. That's a high calcium and magnesium, low sodium and potassium, or a low sodium potassium ratio, less than, say, well, 2.5 is our ideal. And so we might mention that. Now, everything that we've said applies to the autism spectrum illnesses, Asperger's syndrome and so many others. The same imbalances show up in these children: copper imbalance, cadmium, lead, mercury. It just depends where they settle and how severe they are and the combination of factors, in my experience. And I'm not saying that other therapies are not helpful, because once the brain chemistry is off, then other therapies that work with the brain may be very helpful. But the brain chemistry is off, and it would be wonderful to fix it. And a nutrition program should be at least part of any autistic child's program. And a lot of these children work well. There are some practitioners, a friend of mine, who works very heavily with autistic children. Okay, well, those are some of the conditions that I wanted to mention that children are dealing with today and that are so nutritionally related. Just a few quick items on dealing with children. I mentioned they're often good to deal with. You know, you do have to crush the tablets. There are some liquid vitamins around that sometimes can be used, but you have to watch the dosages and all the sugar in there and things like that. The family needs to set an example and work with the child. That's very important. We do get good results with children. In school, you can often do twice a day on vitamins instead of three times. Once a day is not enough, by the way. They could take it morning, after school, and evening sometimes. These days, school nurses sometimes will cooperate, sometimes they won't. And the final thing that I want to mention, other than just to remember again, the diet is so important, is rest and sleep for these children. Children need lots of rest. Many are extremely overstimulated. Lots and lots of rest and sleep. And with that, I will conclude this tape.